This episode is brought to you in part by Reliance AI. Reliance AI streamlines privacy, data protection, and AI governance on one platform with advanced AI for live data mapping, processing activity records, and more. Visit reliance.ai, that's R-E-L-Y-A-N-C-E.ai. It's in the code. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. And I am your host, Demetrius Malbro. And today we are going to have a conversation around lake houses, and not the one that you actually visit with your family and friends, but we're talking about the next big thing in data and also why you might need one. I'm here to welcome Ori Raphael, who is the CEO and co-founder of Upsolver. So, Ori, welcome to the Gumbo.
Thank you. Great to be here.
First and foremost, explain Upsolver and what you guys are up to over there.
So, at Upsolver, we are working on lake houses and specifically building a lake house, so ingesting data into the lake house and managing the lake house itself. So the file system, the metadata, the connection to the catalog, like all of that part. So you will be able to use whatever query engine that you want, whatever warehouse that you want, in order to query your data. And the architecture for the lake house that we are pushing is an Iceberg, an open table format called Iceberg type of lake house.
Iceberg. Now, you're going to have to explain what Iceberg is. Does it sound exactly what it is, like something that sits in a lake house?
So basically, let's think about the idea of the lake house. It's basically to take a database and break it down into individual pieces. So you wouldn't have to buy everything from a single vendor. So you have your files. That's layer one. You have your metadata. And you have the way that the data is actually being described. So how are you going to keep metadata that turns a file into a table, an abstraction of a table that the query engine can use? For that, you have something called an open table format. An open table format, you have Apache Iceberg, you have Delta Lake, you have Hudi. Those were the three main competitors that were being evaluated in the last few years. Iceberg seemed like the winner. That's, of course, an opinion, but backed by a lot of surveys and statistics. So Iceberg seemed to be the winner. So Iceberg is the way you're going to define your files, gather metadata about your files, so they will actually be abstracted into a table that the query engine can start using.
And so just maybe, so you've already explained what a lake house is, and maybe give us an idea around maybe the difference between a traditional data warehouse and also a data lake.
Sure. So let's start with a data warehouse. Easiest to explain is just one box that has everything. So for example, I'm going to a database, I'm doing an insert command, I'm inserting into a database, into a table, and I can query that table. I don't interact with the file system or metadata layer or catalog in any way. I just create a table and I look at it as just one box. The data lake was the idea, was the same concept of a lake house, so a database broken down into individual pieces. So you have your file system layer on S3, and you have a catalog like Hive Metastore, today Iceberg REST catalog. You had managed services around it, like the AWS Blue catalog. And you would build all the components together, kind of mash the components together, and create the same thing as a warehouse, but do a lot more engineering in order to get there. So the difference between a warehouse and a lake was a lot of data engineering. And I think one of the big problems for the lake was that there wasn't a clear standard that was explaining to you how to build your data lake in a way that you're going to get the same functionality as you get with a database. For example, I wanted to do an insert command. I couldn't really do that. I needed to create a file, connect that file to the metadata. There were a lot of limitations. The lake house is basically the evolution. So you take the good pieces of the lake, which is the economics and openness of working with the lake, and you take the best of the warehouse, which is ease of use, And you basically combine them into a single thing. So using something like Iceberg, it makes it easier for you to build a warehouse. And the most important thing there, which is, I think, the difference between a lakehouse and a lake was not connected to the warehouses. You had data in the lake, for example, on S3. You couldn't query that with your Snowflake or your BigQuery or your Redshift. You had to get that data inside of those databases. Now, with the lakehouse, once you store your data using the Iceberg spec, the Iceberg format, all the warehouses will be able to really query that data. So the lakehouse connects the lake data into all the possible engines that actually allow you to get value out of that data, like the warehouses. Lake warehouse evolution or consolidation into a new lakehouse.
Got it. And I'm sure you're having conversations with high-level executives. So I'm talking CEOs, and maybe let's just stick with the CEO. Let's say he may not have, or she may not have ever heard of a lakehouse before. So how would you explain to that CEO, and you're trying to convince them that, yes, you do indeed need a lakehouse, and here's the value of what a lakehouse brings or would bring to your organization?
So I would say the two main things I would talk to that CEO about were their costs and their ability to do advanced use cases like AI. Those are the two main things I would say. Let's start with the AI side. It's easier to explain. So once my data is inside the warehouse, and that's true if that warehouse was named Oracle or Snowflake, eventually I need to get to run my queries, run my AI on top of the data that's already inside the warehouse. Otherwise, I need to replicate it out, which is a lot of, it's a big pain. A lot of customers would say today, I like this warehouse for BI, but I don't like it for AI. I want to use something else for AI. So if you want to go with best of breed tooling and allow advanced use cases to develop in your organization, you want to keep your data in a way that you can employ multiple engines to query that. How are you doing that? You're using a lakehouse. Lakehouse gives you an open source storage, metadata, and hopefully also governance for your data. So you own your data and you use the query engine according to the use case. So if you want to do AI and BI together, probably it's best to use open source storage like Iceberg. So that would be my number one. My number two would be cost. And one of the biggest items today in any company's IT budget is the data warehouse costs. So once you use a warehouse, usually there is a high premium as a result of that. But a warehouse is not just used for queries. It's used also for processing data. For example, let's say I want to bring data into my warehouse. I need to spin up warehouse clusters, and they need to work all the time, like at least during the time that I'm writing data into that database. And if I want to write data all the time, which is what all the companies want to do, especially in security, you get events, you want them to be immediately accessible. So you need to have warehouse clusters up all the time. So that's a high cost for you. And warehouse compute is also expensive. So once you take ownership over writing your own data, so I'm writing into S3. I'm not writing into a warehouse. I'm just writing my data into S3. I write it in, I'm using a catalog that the warehouse can later use to discover the data there. I no longer need to spin up warehouse clusters in order to write data into the... So this is a piece of your budget that it's very easy to identify. This is the cluster that you use for moving data. You just shut them down and you understand how much money you're going to save as a result of that. And that... Like that's just, say, step number one. Step number two is you don't need to store your data twice. You don't need it to be in the lake and then in the warehouse. You can just store it in the lake and make it queryable there. So you save a complete data copy. And in addition, you get more bargaining power with your warehouses because they no longer hold your data as a kind of, they don't have it in their proprietary format. So you could create some competition between them and get the best rates for querying your data. So you have multiple layers of big cost reduction. And I'll quote from a survey that a company called Dremio in our space did earlier this year. And they said 70% of enterprises plan to move to open table formats, which means the lakehouse, in the next 3 years. So 70% of them, that's a high number. Mm-hmm. And 50% of them expect to save more than 50% of their analytics costs.
So
that's
okay.
A high expectation for cost reduction, and often the reason why people want to move quickly into the kind of adopt Iceberg quickly, that more I pay for my warehouse, the more incentive I have to move into a lakehouse architecture.
Okay, so obviously that CEO will truly be concerned about the impact to the business and how can they get the right information quickly so they can make informed decisions about how to move the business in the right direction to increase revenues. So I guess, what's the competitive edge or advantage that a company would gain from a lakehouse and the whole architecture around the lakehouse? And also another question as well, like what specific industry would benefit mostly from a lakehouse?
Let's take security. For example, security.
Okay.
How can you, a security company is basically a data company, an analytics or AI company.
Yeah,
they need to create value out of a lot of data. So how can they do that? What do they need? First of all, they need a lot of data. So they want to storage much of it for as long as they can. Cost is often a prohibitive. Something that, for example, I have a customer, a big public company, they were using Splunk as in order to analyze events, but they were very limited with retention because of the high cost. So they decided to create a lakehouse before sending the data into Splunk that was used for retaining all of their data. So now they can use all their data to show bring value to customers and not just the most recent data. That's point number one. Point number two is the granularity of what you can do. I can look at every device, every IP, every endpoint. So the fact that I am able to keep data at a very low granularity is important for me to create value for the users, because eventually they want to go all the way down into that level. The third thing is that I'm able to use the most advanced tools and all the innovation that's happening in the data space, because my data is not locked into a single platform and I don't need to ask my application developers to wait a year until someone is going to actually replicate their data into a different repository for them to use. By the way, I was a DBA for many years. Everything I'm saying is things that I've experienced. And every time you ask a developer to wait for application project and be dependent on a application project that's often brittle and often fails, and kind of that you feel the air coming out of the room, and they understand that they're just going to have to use the warehouse that they have and not be able to use those additional tools that they research and they were excited about. So I think the fact that you can use any tool over more data at better granularity, these will be the reason you'll be able to have an edge from data.
And it sounds like a lakehouse is really a key system for organizations to have. Is that something that needs to be online all the time, or is there any like redundancy, or you mentioned clusters earlier, like any high availability? Can it go down? It's not like a number one highest tier type of application, is it, or is it not?
So the answer is depends. So every one of the questions you just asked, and I'll explain why. So the first use case you'll see companies do is research. What does research mean? I mean, I just want to store all my raw data and make it queryable. So my data scientist will be able to actually be productive. It took me so long to hire that person, and they're so expensive. At least they will be able to work. Now, if the cluster goes down and for 30 minutes, the data scientist cannot really get service, or if just sometimes you close it down during the night, that's fine. That's great, no impact. On the other side, once you start using your warehouse to serve your applications, then the production necessity for that warehouse equals the one of the application. For example, we have customers that drive all their financial reporting to customers and all their product analytics through the warehouse. So every time the warehouse is down, they need to go and apologize and report it to tens of thousands of partners that they have. And if something is wrong, maybe the financial information reported is not going to be correct. That's super production. By the way, as a company that supports these type of workloads, We have 24/7 SLA from day one and a big support team. And we try to answer, we promise 1 hour, but we usually answer in production stuff in minutes. It's a very important requirement for customers that you're going to give, you know, almost S3 level of availability, because the warehouse could become super production. So it really depends. And maybe the rule of thumb, if it's research, that's sensitive. If it's dashboards, more sensitive, it's internal employees, super sensitive. If it's external employees or financial reporting, mm-hmm. or any type of machine learning application that does trading. That's
okay.
The worst.
Okay. Like, yeah. So it sounds like the storage subsystem on the back end of a lakehouse really makes a difference, right? You probably, from instead of hard disk drives, you probably would need some SSDs and some really high performance, so you can get that information back a lot quicker as well. And so on-prem systems versus in the cloud and all of that, can you explain the differences between maybe the performance impact of the different types of disks and whether you're running on-prem or in the cloud?
Yeah. So first of all, I would say that the most important thing, I've been in the business for 20 years. I feel like mm-hmm. the most important thing that has happened in those 20 years is the invention of cloud object storage.
Okay.
So like S3. So the first thing I learned when they gave me the 800 pages book on Oracle internals is that an IO operation, a disk operation, is your enemy. And in then general, disks, local disks, are the enemy. They break down, they run out of space, you need to add them. Like a lot of the work you do around databases is related to storage. Mm-hmm. But once you have cloud object storage, it does no longer have the characteristics of regular storage. First of all, it's unlimited. Second, it's very stable on performance. It never breaks. So you have these advantages in Snowflake. Use those advantages. The reason Snowflake was successful is because they used those advantages to build a better data warehouse, the idea of a decoupled data warehouse. And the performance you can get out of S3 is amazing. There are limitations. You can get amazing performance out of S3. Still, I see most of the warehouse companies using local SSDs more of a caching layer than long-term mm-hmm. storage.
Yeah.
So long-term storage on cloud object storage create ease of use and unlimited scalability for the warehouses. The SSDs allow you to cache, you know, SSD and in-memory type of behavior. Those both allow you to get better performance when you actually go and query the data.
Okay. And so you mentioned S3 a few times as well. Is this also something that I guess the other hyperscalers, maybe yes. your product? So Google, Microsoft, Azure, all those things.
It's the same concept. Our product today works on AWS. It will okay. deploy to other clouds in the future, giving mm-hmm. S3 because it's the most famous object storage, I guess. And also, it's also a standard. The GCP object storage is S3 compliant. But the idea I'm saying here is not specific. The lakehouse is not specific to Amazon. It's going to be the same everywhere.
And earlier you mentioned AI, right? So that brings me to thinking about the future of data management. And what are you seeing when you look at your crystal ball as far as data management and lakehouses are concerned? And maybe you're sitting in the future right now with what you're creating and what you've created with Upsolver. But what do you see beyond that?
What do I see beyond that? Well, I think that the journey to the lakehouse hasn't been completed yet. Like I told you, the lake was a very chaotic space. Nothing was really standardized. From a lot mm-hmm. of functionalities was missing. And it's clear to all the vendors that are working on lakehouses that it needs to be warehouse compliant. It needs to do the exact same thing that warehouses give you. On storage file system, we are there. Open table format, and which is basically metadata, we are there. Iceberg solved the problem. It can improve, but we already have what we need to build a good warehouse. I think that on the catalog side, right now there is a lot of happening in our space. I don't know if you've seen that Snowflake has released an open source catalog called Polaris. Databricks took their catalog called Unity. And right now we're in the middle of catalog wars. And the catalog is a type of linchpin. because the catalog is where you're going to set your governance. And if you're an enterprise, the place that you define your policies is not something that you want to change every day. So it's a, it can create a type of lock-in. And I think that the idea is to take as much, I think what the customer wants is that as much of the governance as possible would be open source. I feel like the catalog piece, I don't feel it's just the status in the market. The catalog piece, what is it going to support? Which vendor is going to offer which catalog? That part is being matured, but it's probably going to be matured by next year, but we are not all the way there. So I think asking about the future, the spec for an Iceberg or Lakehouse catalog is going to be there, and that will be the last piece that we're really missing. I think that all new warehouses that are going to be born are going to be lakehouses and not warehouses. This is not an idea. If you even look at the Snowflake earnings report, and listen to what their CFO is saying, Snowflake today is, they keep the storage today in the warehouse, and in the lakehouse paradigm, the storage remains with the customer. They're seeing, projecting a reduction in storage revenue, and they're projecting a reduction in storage revenue means that the storage is going to go into the customer account instead of Snowflake accounts. Snowflake is not going to monetize out of that revenue. That's a very strong sign that we are going to see lakehouses spread like wildfire in the next 3 to 5 years. And that's going to be the number one trend that's going to change warehouses. So how big is it? Warehouses had their first version of enterprise data warehouse on premise. You have your cloud warehouse that was Redshift, cloud hosted. Then you had your decoupled, which was Snowflake, basically separating compute and storage. And now we are moving into an open format lakehouse. That's Gen 4. So that's the biggest thing that's going to happen there. And that's going to unlock a lot of the AI innovation happening out there, because the major platforms will no longer lock the data from those platforms. So the small startups of the world that want to innovate on top of data would be able to do it quickly and not go through less hurdles, have less barriers of entry that are in front of the customers. I think that's going to support the AI revolution.
Okay, insightful. And one final question here for you. The job market is a little interesting right now. We keep hearing talks of recession and inflation, and there's a political battle going on over here in the US, and it's just a lot going on. A lot of layoffs still happening as well. What advice would you give to someone out there right now that may be looking to, let's say they're fresh out of college, right? And they're looking for their first job, computer science major, trying to get into IT, and maybe lakehouses has piqued their interest. Like, what advice would you give to them?
I would say start building stuff. You know, pet projects go a long way with employers. So if it shows us that the employee is curious, that they're able to be a self-starter, learn stuff on their own. So pet projects are a great way to shine compared to other people. So if you have your college degree and not much experience, but there is a pet project that you can highlight in your resume and talk about during your interview, I think that's going to give you a big edge. What type of pet project? There's a billion out there. You can go to Kaggle and work on dataset. You can go to Cloudera. By the way, when I started to go deeper into the machine learning space, going through Coursera's course on machine learning, and going through their deep learning courses, it's just a very quick way to learn something new. You do you get your hands a little dirty, you do some actual work, and you can take that and just work on any project that interests you. I have a friend, by the way, that I think that person would be an asset for any company. And his spare time is building small robots with his kid, and just trying to get that kid curious about programming, and they enjoy seeing the materialization of their code in the physical world. So there are kits that you can order. Just start building stuff. Don't wait for the employer to give you your project. That will be a very strong sign that you really stand out. And I agree with you. It's not easy out there. I'm seeing the layoffs. I'm talking to a lot of people that haven't found a job for a long period of time.
Right.
not an easy market.
Yeah, not an easy market. Indeed it is. And Ori, I do appreciate the time that you've spent with us, all the insight and some of the best practices around lake houses, et cetera. So one more thing before I let everyone go, please do take a look at the LinkedIn group called Backup and Recovery Professionals. There are over 26,000 of us in that group, and we all specialize in things like cybersecurity and data storage, backup recovery, compliance and regulations and privacy, blockchain. I mean, we're talking all different types of digital and data type conversations that we're having in that group. So please check that out as well. Data Protection Gumbo is also on YouTube. So find us there also in Ori. Maybe last shout out for Upsolver. Anything that you'd like to recommend, maybe a white paper or blog or maybe the website, whatever you'd like to mention about the company, that would be great right now.
Sure. We run monthly webinars on Iceberg, starting from, and you can see the previous ones, starting from the very basics to deeper topics like migration from existing data lakes. You can join the webinars, they're educational. You can actually try out the product, don't pay anything, just have the educational experience. So I would find if you're interested in lake houses and Iceberg, just check out those webinars. I think they'll bring you a lot of value.
All right. Well, Ori, thank you once again for being a guest right here on Data Protection Gumbo. We'll definitely have to have you back in the future.
Thank you.